If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Mike Ray, former cop and body double for a world-famous action star, was ready to put show business behind him when he was asked to do one last favor for Hollywood's hottest new actress. All he had to do was find her the necklace from a forgotten film and not get killed in the process. From the insane house parties of Malibu and the reclusive mansions of Beverly Hills to the scorching California desert, Mike finds himself in a scandal involving one of the world's most eccentric billionaires, the Nevada Mafia, and a sadistic Estonian porn kingpin. To find the necklace, he'll have to blow the lid off a secret buried in the California desert that stretches back to ancient Egypt, with an irresistible client who won't take no for an answer. If the job doesn't get him killed, she just might. Hollywood Pharaohs by Andrew Main has been described as a fast-paced love child of The Big Lebowski and Indiana Jones. Find out why readers have made this book one of the best reviewed in all of Amazon. It's Hollywood Pharaohs by Andrew Main, available for only $2.99 on the Amazon Kindle store. Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Boys and girls, ghouls and goblins, welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm so excited right now because we're at one of those moments in history where you'll go, I was there. If you're listening to this later on, you'll be like, I was there, plus however many hours from the time we recorded this that you were able to listen to this. Do your own math. I'm joined by Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hi, everybody.
Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Part man, part machine, all party robot 8000. Half Pegasus, half unicorn, all fraternity brother. That's me.
Gentlemen, we've got a lot of exciting news happening. A lot of exciting news bursting at the seams. And I'm trying to, like, which story do I lead with? And frankly, you know, imagine, like, you're... I don't know, like 1933 or something like that, and you walk through a comic book store, like a newsstand.
The funny pages.
Yeah, and you pick up a thing called Detective Comics on the cover.
Yeah, sure.
Guy, this like man bat kind of guy.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's pretty awesome.
Was it 1933 really? Was when that started?
Something like that. I'm getting getting the number wrong. It was the 30s, so maybe 38, 39, somewhere around there.
That's amazing.
1333 was the first recorded Batman.
Very few people know that it was actually Geoffrey Chaucer was the first to write down the tale of the Batfellow, as it was written.
The Bat Gentleman.
F-E-L-L-O-W-E was how it was originally spelled.
So then you, like, you know, maybe like you're a kid and you're turning on the radio and then you hear 1939, May 1939. So you're a kid, and you're hearing the radio, and all of a sudden you hear, like, this radio drama of, like, Superman.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
No.
1970s, you turn on your TV, and there's this guy wearing this, like, American flag suit on a badass motorcycle ready to, like, jump over some buses or something.
Wait, are you talking about Evel Knievel or the 1970s Captain America with the plastic shield?
Evel Knievel.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay.
You're like, I believe in heroes. Right now, ladies and gentlemen, we are in the presence of one of those moments that 50 years from now, 100 years from now, as it's sweeping movie theaters, as it becomes its own franchise, we'll be like, I remember when I got into it before it was cool.
What is it? What is it? I must know.
It's real life superhero.
Who?
We think.
Do I know him? No, I don't know him.
I don't know. Maybe you do know him.
Does he have like for real superpowers, or is he?
He's like you know, like Spider-Man can like climb and stuff. This
sure.
guy's got powers like the animal he's named for.
Comparable to Spider-Man?
Perhaps.
So, see, it's themed after an animal. What kind of animal is it? Is it like Badger Man?
Better.
Better than a badger?
Yeah.
The Tasmanian raccoon?
Yeah, I feel like that could be its own television show. Better than a badger?
Better than
we
a badger?
We got photos. We got videos. We've got a name. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Goat Man.
Running up the craggy hills of Utah.
Middle Utah, photos, some guy, goat man, some goat, looks like a man looks like a goat, some half-breed goat man kind of thing.
Good, I'm looking
up
the goat
hill,
man.
Where only goats would go. Photos, video, fact.
Officials work to identify goat man seen trailing a herd in Utah mountains. Is that him?
Yeah.
It looks like a guy like in a little Bo Peep lamb costume, complete with a big old bell.
You know,
it's the goat man, Brian. He's out
it's
there.
Really up to us to judge, Brian.
He's solving crimes, man, and through Utah. Like, I feel like this is going to become a presidential issue. Where it's like Mitt Romney. Can you say on the record that you know the goat man?
Will you apprehend the goat man?
He's like following the herd, protecting from like wolves and coyotes and hillbillies with shotguns, man.
How on earth can he? This guy's just going to get shot by somebody poaching goats.
This guy, there you go. You make this assumption that it's just some dude in like, you know, some furry costume. You got lost from like, you know, one of them.
You don't
West
think
Coast comic conventions where he got a little bit drunk and went wandering and ended up on a hill.
I'm Goat Man.
No, it's I'm Goat Man.
Utah authorities are working to identify a man spotted dressed as a goat suit among a herd of wild goats in the mountains of northern Utah. The photographer who snapped the blurry photos of the individual, dubbed Goat Man, told Fox affiliate they spotted the man as he was descending Ben Lomond Peak. That's awesome. He was clumsy.
It's like a sheer rock face.
He was clumsy, working his way down the cliff, trying to catch up with the rest of the herd. With the binoculars, I could clearly see it was a guy dressed up in a homemade goat suit.
Clearly,
what if this
is hearsay?
But what if this is like the beginning of his training?
Yeah.
Like he needs to live amongst the goats and know that he can be one of them before he can learn to harness their powers and protect his own people.
Yeah. He's got it, like, you know, before Batman went to, you know, the ninja monastery, you know, he was tripping all over the place. This is going to be part of the training. Maybe there is a ninja goat monastery up in the mountains of Utah somewhere. I think that was in the Book of Mormon. I'm pretty sure.
Crichton said the man appeared to be wearing heavy gloves so he could crawl on his hands and knees. He also said that at one point the man lifted his mask and looked up at him for several minutes. He kind of slouched down like he was getting nervous or was feeling really self-conscious.
Right, you know, it's not easy being a superhero, Brian.
He actually got off his hands and knees and sat on the hill for several minutes until he thought I was gone.
You know, it's people like you are why it made it hard for Spider-Man to become a hero. It's why Batman is considered a vigilante and not a hero, Brian. Why Iron Man was forced to reveal himself. People like you.
Phil Douglas of the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources said the person wearing the goat suit is doing nothing illegal, but he worries that the man is unaware of the dangers.
Maybe that guy's unaware of the dangers that he's going to be protected from now that Goat Man's on the case.
My very first concern is the person doesn't understand the risks, Douglas said. Who's to say what could happen? This is
I'll
awesome.
Tell you what's going to happen. Safety, protection, truth, justice in the American way.
He worries that the goat man may be accidentally shot or could be attacked by a real goat. They may get agitated. They're territorial. They are, after all, wild animals, he says. This person puts on a goat suit, he changes the game. But as long as he accepts responsibility.
You change things.
It's not illegal. Wow.
So what's Goatman's nemesis going to be?
Apparently it's Douglas, because it says here Douglas said, "Wow,
yeah, old Peepin' Tom McGirt."
Yes.
Who's just sitting there keeping an eye on old goats.
Wildlife officials received an anonymous call Thursday from an agitated man. The caller simply said, "Leave Goatman alone. He's done nothing wrong." Wow. This is amazing, dude. This is, and by the way, I am 100% for this. What's the quote from, I always heard it was Salvador Dali who said,
"Hey, you know, we need Goatman." That was what Salvador Dali said.
No, Salvador Dali said, "What a pity that so little of what could happen does," which is like, the world needs more weird, and this is about as weird as it gets. We need more Goatmen out there.
I'm telling you, man, I'm trying to imagine he's protecting us, and you just sort of dismiss the whole idea. I mean, what are some of the supervillains he might be? I mean, his own nemesis is probably like a Greek guy looking for, like, make an hero. But
The problem is, it's like he's probably awesome at, like, Weed Man. He can totally eat Weed Man or Paper Man.
Tin Can Man.
Yeah, Tin Can Man.
Like, you know, you're like, middle of the
You'll
night.
You'll never get me, Goat Man. It's me, Tin Can Man.
We're mugging. We're like a gang mugging somebody like that. A cold wind blows by. We can hear coyotes in the mountains. And all of a sudden, we hear a bell. What is that? Oh, no. I've heard about him.
It's Tinkle, like, you start hearing, like Boz, like, from different, you know, like... Like from different areas, like.
But
you, like,
no, that's like when, like, the chips are down at the sporting event, and they only the goat man could save them. One person goes bah, and then someone else goes ah, and then another person joins in. Finally, the whole stadium's going
I'm goat man.
Goat man needs a theme.
Like a stirring instrumental, or like a song.
I'd go for any.
Have you heard that video of the goat that yells like a man?
Yes.
Like, I feel like that should be his battle cry.
Does he get a catchphrase?
Yes. Hold on, if you don't mind, I actually
have.
Are you
done chewing on that?
Here's his battle cry.
Oh, come on. All right, give me your money, lady.
I can't tell which one is you guys and which is Goatman.
I don't know, man. I don't want to mess with anything with Goatman out on the hills.
Did you guys hear that? It's Goatman.
Studies.
I'm in love with Goatman.
Goatman was safe until we brought in the horny Scotsman.
Oh, no.
What?
Hey there, Goatman.
No!
I'll make you yell like a man.
I finally trapped you where I wanted you, at the edge of a hill. You know, I like that because it pushes back. I'm the horny Scotsman. Oh, ever God. Since a goat man.
Climb down this, goat man.
So in all seriousness, what do you think this guy is?
Number one, that's the funniest time that phrase has ever been said in the English language.
All right.
If you're talking about Goatman, it's never been anything else other than about Goatman. It's not like we started talking about monetary policy and then we veered into Goatman. Like, it's been about Goatman. It's like, no, but in all seriousness.
No, but in all seriousness,
let's get back to the
Goatman.
Point at hand about Goatman.
No, do you think this guy was a researcher or furry?
I'm going to put him more towards the furry category.
Man, but for that guy... For that guy, though, like, he's living the dream. He's like, I want to be part of the herd, running free with goats.
I think it sounded like a great idea on paper.
And then some guy took pictures
of him. Really? When does that that ever sound like a great idea? Like, when in the cold reality?
How do you end up on the mountain? When does this? You start off like, I'm gonna dress up a goat. I'm gonna go, and you get up the mountain. You're like, oh my god, this is steep.
Could be a crackhead.
Tiny little goat feet.
Got hold of the wrong stuff. Told him to climb up a mountain and act a goat.
Just sort of snowballed from there. Did he like go through different sketches? Was he like Raccoon Man? No, Cartman did that on South Park. What hasn't been taken?
Goat Man.
Salamander Man.
Yeah. Didn't like crawling on his belly, you know.
No. He was the salamander.
What would you like? Okay, so
what kind of barnyard animal would you
So like we are the three of us are on a Weird Things retreat. We're in a cabin in the woods.
The Weird Things offsite.
That's right. So it's a once annual retreat where the three of us focus and meditate on what it means to do weird things, and then we see out the window we see Goatman crawling around. And the first thing we think of is, let's make this guy's day. Let's whip up three bad guys for him to beat. And we'll just show up to menace him, and he'll defeat us with his goat powders. Goat powders.
His goat powders? Well, that's probably what he does.
He throws powder in your face.
Because he's so coked up on the hill, dressed like a goat.
Goat powder is actually just cocaine. He's high as a kite.
I blame bath salts.
Yeah. No, number one, if I really want to make his day, I'm throwing out, you know, a bunch of aluminum cans and a half a working bike horn, and he's just going to go nuts.
It turns out he doesn't want to fight crime. He just wants to chew on things.
He likes chewing on things. He's learned. Listen, Brian, he's like Mowgli. Like, he's just raised among goats.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm dressing up somebody as like a tin can robot to go steal one of the sheep.
Man, it's almost like trying to out-weird the weirdest guy in the room, where it's just like you want to take it to another level, and you got like glowing lights, and you start like shouting in binary, just 001. You just get more and more mad. You're like 0011 0111 0111 00.
And then you look over, and he's like licking the paint so hard it's coming off.
It becomes like a game of weird chicken to see who's going to crack first, the guy who swears he's a robot from outer space or Goat Man.
You can't out-weird a guy like that. Some men just want to watch the world become Goat Man.
Some men just want to eat all the grass in the world.
I mean, Think about it. Like, it's one thing, like, I'm going to make myself a badass superhero costume and patrol the mean streets of, you know,
a rural Utah. You know,
but when you decide to dress up like a goat, go where you don't plan on being seen. So you're kind of like, who's the costume for? It's obviously trying to fool the goats.
Imagine this, because, you know, there's always like the crossovers. Like, even like, you know, like Punisher did a crossover with Archie. You know, like, what is like in the real world superhero realm? What is the like Phoenix Jones and Goatman adventure that like.
I feel like it would be like him and Iron Fist, Goatman and Iron Fist, or Power Man or something.
That sounds so horrible, Brian.
That sounds like a whole nother genre of entertainment.
Yeah, I think it's a good time to thank our sponsors.
You know, I moved out to LA, and then 2 months later, I was working on a film called Goatman and Iron Fist.
I thought it would be the door opening to my career.
I've been a bad boy. I'll tell you what. Let me tell you guys about a little book, okay? It's written by Peter Welch, and it's called And Then I Thought I Was a Fish. Listen, it's available on Kindle. You can head on over to Amazon and go for $2.99. Buy it. Put it all up on your Kindle. Here's the description. In the summer of 2000, I combined drugs, stress, sleep deprivation, and an above-average share of youthful recklessness to produce a 3-month psychotic episode. I lost all touch with reality and spent those months taking wild swings getting it back. After a stint in a mental institution, Grand Theft Auto, a handful of monks, and a surprising number of hippies, I came back. 12 years after that, I decided to write it down. It was only published in May 1st, 2012, and it's a listener of this podcast. Go support somebody who is truly freaking weird.
This is amazing. This guy, this is the guy who has to take on Goat Man.
Well, there we go. Peter Welch, we very much thank him for sponsoring this podcast. And if you would like to sponsor this podcast, head on over to weirdthings.com/sponsor and you can get your listener shout out for $30. Hey, look at that. Here I thought it was a fish, and then I bought a Weird Thing sponsor.
All right, gentlemen. Trying to figure out the... I don't want to make too light of what happened, but I think there is comedic value in there. Brian, you do some crazy dangerous stuff in your show.
Mitigated danger. It certainly looks crazy and it looks dangerous, but you know, it's you know, I'm trying to keep it safe within reason. But yes, some nutty things happen in my stage show for sure.
So, you eat fire?
Yeah, yeah.
You like? You ever walk on broken glass?
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I did. I used to get someone from the audience and have them piggyback, and then I would jump up and down in the broken glass, and I was always. I always knew it was kind of a roll of the dice. It was just like Russian roulette with my feet. I was just jumping. I never sliced the hell out of them, but always thought it could happen.
Tell me about the time that you maimed 21 people in the middle of your act.
Oh, dear God. I know exactly where this is headed. And
what was that like?
No, you see, I've never done that.
Although, what about the screams of agony? You know, make it stop. Please, please, God, make it stop.
Well, what... As far as I understand, the right thing to do is to shout at them that they're not believing hard enough when that happens.
They're not releasing the power within. Well, you keep all that power in there, and next thing you know...
If they were at peak performance, then their feet would turn to lead, and they would be able to walk all around in it. They'd have melted feet, though.
Yeah, lead melts, but... So, at least 21 people at a Tony Robbins event were treated for serious burns after doing a walk on fire... And this is an event he's been doing for 3 decades, tons of times. And I've heard anecdotally that, like, he does it in Hawaii, that the hospital there, they frequently get people showing up with burns on their feet the day after the walk on fire.
Wow.
Because no one wants to be the big, you know, poon daddy that, you know, decided to, you know, be the burn foot guy at the Tony Robbins thing.
Yeah. So, you know, it's. I would say in his defense, every time I've seen him presented, it's not presented as a supernatural thing. It's presented like skydiving or whatever else, just getting over your fear. And I know a lot of skeptics are like, he's trying, like, well, anytime you can bring, you know, 6,000 people outside and have them walk on fire, you're not kind of, it's not like saying it's ghosts, you know.
Right.
But
right.
Yeah.
There is an important safety factor here. And apparently, I don't know what happened, you know, why, you know, you can walking on fire, walking on coals, there's a right way to do it, an even better way to do it, not do it at all. But apparently maybe some protocols weren't followed, or maybe they got a bunch of tender-footed people. So 21 people were burned at this event.
So what? All right. So I was thinking about this a lot. What do you think is different in this particular situation than before? Like, is it just that thing where was Tony off his game?
No.
Because normally Tony's so into his game, everyone's so dialed in, that nobody wants to admit that they're the hot-footed dude. And no. So, like, did he kind of suck? So, like, it just, once that dam broke, of like, my feet are literally burning!
Wait a minute. So you think it's a case where, like, he didn't give as motivational a talk as he usually did, and so, like, at some point...
He was unleashing his own power.
Exactly. So at some point, like, dominoes started falling, and all of a sudden, people, like, were like, Because there's sort of this herd mentality, right? That's part of how group hypnosis and mass hysteria works, is you sort of want to go along with whatever the vibe is that everyone else is feeling. And it might be a case where he didn't nail his motivational talk. And all of a sudden in the calculus, they're like, well, do I want to be the lone guy saying, no, I actually thought it was a really good presentation and it was awesome that I walked on fire. And I mean, it's a little bit tender, but it's not bad. Or do I want to be part of the screaming herd of 21 people shouting, my feet, my feet?
Well, it just seems like that would be a very, like, once that dam bursts, you know, like once the emperor's new clothes, like once, you know, once the follower's burned feet, you know, is revealed, then kind of, it's more likely that people are going to be like, no, my feet are also really hurting.
See, this is tough because I would love to do group instruction on fire eating, but it's this liability thing that terrifies me, you know?
Yeah, and apparently I had 12 lanes of hot coals, and you've got to wait a certain amount of time for them to get to a certain point. And there are a couple of little factors that can apply into, like, you know, moisture can make things stick to your feet you don't want to stick. How long you stand there, a lot of little factors come into play. And I don't know, you know, really what happened here. But, you know, when you hear the descriptions of, I heard walls of pain, screams of agony. You know, it's like it was people seriously hurting, like they were being tortured. First one person, then a couple minutes later, another, and a line of people walking on the fire. So, you know, people who do it, you know, go, you know, it's a big moment in their life because you get people who have never pushed themselves outside an envelope like that. And when they do successfully do it, it makes them feel excited and empowered to do it. And I do understand the psychological value of something like that. But
now, so what do you think it is? Do you think I would love to be a fly on the wall, like, and it turns out like there's just Tony Robbins, he's smoking cigarettes, you know, in his room. He's just like, oh, great. A whole hassle of freaking whiners. Whiners! He leans out the window, shouts, crybabies!
Well, I was trying to find the statement on his website about it. Just
petulant kinda... Tony Robbins is maybe my new favorite character. Because he has such a calm kind of, you know, exterior. Like, what if, like, as soon as that door shuts, he's just so petty.
Yes! Petty Tony Robbins.
Petty Tony Robbins. They're like... Was it so hard? I listen, it's fine. Like, I'll drink Coke Zero, but, like, I like Coke. Is having an opinion against the law a petulant Tony Robbins?
I'll tell you what, though. In Tony Robbins' defense, and this is one of the weird things, like...
He was in Shallow Hal.
He was in Shallow Hal. Played Banana Hands. It was a hell of a role. But the important thing is, man, when you are in a high-stress situation, it feels really, really good to listen to someone like Tony Robbins just sketch out what success might look like. And just if you could place yourself in that vision for even a second, like that's enough go-go juice to make you dare to get on stage and fail in front of a bunch of people, you know? I mean, it's like I understand on the there's two sides. I'm really of two minds. On the one hand, I'm super annoyed that so much of neurolinguistic programming is just totally made up pseudoscientific BS. On the flip side, there are an awful lot of people who definitely attempt things that they wouldn't normally attempt because they hear, you know, these rah-rah speeches from folks like Tony Robbins. And so, I don't know. It's hard for me to want to hate on. I mean,
people are more likely to do things because they think they have magic beans in their pocket.
No, not so much magic beans, but like it's... Let's say you do a two-hour session or whatever.
Not magic beans, success beans.
Yeah, let's say you spend 2 hours just picturing what it would look like to be successful. Because that's the biggest problem is there is truth to the fact that you can't outpace where you feel like you deserve to be, right?
I'm 10 foot tall. I've got a lightsaber.
There you go.
Okay. Going. All right. I'm going with this.
Yeah. I'm on a scooter and I've got two fat people on scooters with me and we all ride like a team.
Oh, it's like that great photo of like the two fat twins riding motorcycles.
Exactly. I'm in the middle and I'm their leader.
There you go. Pound for pound, the biggest gang there is. And then you gotta be buried in that piano box or something?
Something like that, yeah. But yeah, all right, Brian, I'm visualizing, and I feel like I'm outpacing my station.
Okay, good. Well, then I need you to picture, you know, all those haters, all those naysayers. I need you to make their voices. I need you to make their voices squeaky and insignificant, and I need you to take their pictures and put them in the sun. And do you feel empowered? Do you feel like you have what it takes to seize the moment and achieve the ultimate pinnacle of rocket sauce?
I mean, I see where that is, where that can be a thing. You know, I think for me, something like that is hard because, like, it's hard to listen to other people's criticism when you're yelling at yourself so loudly.
Yes, yes.
And so, like, reducing that voice, you know, to a lower thing is a different situation. I don't know. I mean, I guess here was the only thing that rubbed me the wrong way about the Tony Robbins thing. It's like, all right, let's take him at face value that, like, this is, like, all best intentions. That all Z is doing is just trying to, is a fair, like, people are paying money for a fair trade of getting their minds right because he's got this way of putting their minds in a certain alignment that will make them more successful, right?
Right.
And this is part of it. This is part of his...
It's a confidence boost. Like, look, I'm going to say some things, and historically, for millions of people, whenever I say these things, they report that they feel like they're ready to tackle things that they would normally tackle. So come on over and do that.
Here's the thing. If something like this happens, then that means, theoretically, if this was all legit, or and it might be. I'm not saying it isn't, but, like, it would be like, oh, somebody screwed up. We shouldn't have done it when it was this temperature. We shouldn't have done it. Yeah, we should have waited an extra 45 minutes for the polls.
That's one way. Or what he could do is petty Tony Robbins could be like, you didn't believe. You told me you had what it took.
Well, no, that's the thing. He's like, I kind of feel like if it's legit, then explain it. Because legit things go wrong all the time. Mm-hmm. People
the victim mentality where people are blaming themselves, a guy going, he didn't think that he was in the right state. No.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you were in... the wrong state by far. You were the one where you walked on the friggin' hot coals and got burned. But 21 people out of 6,000, though, you think it's statistically, though, that's less than 1%.
Oh, I mean, that's way less. That's a third of a percent?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, that ain't nothing. 6,000 people, 21 of them got crybaby burns? Man, look, this guy gave you the secret to peak performance. Why don't you take a deep breath and focus your thetans and I'm gonna mix that. No, I'll tell you. Look, I don't
shuffle
know.
On up to Candy Mountain.
Yeah, exactly. It's I don't
you
know,
go, man.
I'm so of two minds. I'm so of two minds because people really seem to. It is.
Get
it
your
is,
hand burn hoofs, goat man.
Goat man. I eat the coals.
You guys smell kebab?
Goat man, fight you.
I think some of the stuff that comes out of his books and stuff is kind of silly, but I also think that he's inspired a lot of people. And I think there's a lot of people, you know, as much as I love science and stuff, you know, you're not going to find a lot about how to wake up each day and get excited about the work you have to do in front of you. And there's... Well,
and that's the thing is there are areas that, you know, the real frontiers of psychology, right? For example, pain management. Pain is insane. Like we don't understand, modern science doesn't really understand how or why it works and why placebos are so powerful for reducing pain or whatever.
Why 1% of Tony Robbins attendees are such sissies.
Yes, exactly. But likewise, you know, the science, and I'm doing air quotes for anybody not watching live, the science of success, I mean, at some level, you got to start somewhere. And with the not quite so scientific process of, you know, examining what people who are successful tend to do and having a seminar where you talk about those things and, you know, take other people who are, you know, in the middle of trying their first sales job or I don't know, quitting their job from Dell to try to pursue a career as a magician and maybe need to hear about the possibility that they need to get off their ass and work really hard every day. You know, even if it's a lie, you know, it's a lie that gets you off your ass and gets stuff happening. So, I don't know.
It's not a lie that makes you like risk your life by walking on hot coals or something.
Well, yeah, but even then, it's really not.
I know. I agree. I totally agree. I'm just.
Yeah,
I'm gonna do my drinking acid.
Yeah, at least it's not a lie that involves like snakes and arsenic.
Ooh, master level course.
Hey, I got something to tell you guys about. How about a little Con Langery? Listen, Con Langery has sponsored this podcast a couple times, and it is a podcast about constructed languages. Like, they don't talk about the cop-outs that Brian mentioned the last time that Con Langery sponsored this podcast. Brian talked about how a lot of invented language in movies and film are just real languages that they call, like, oh, it's not French, it's called Borgers. And they don't talk about that. They talk about actual well-developed language with actual grammars and good lexicons of words. So how about you go listen to it? Con Langery is the podcast they talk about. It really is great. If you're fascinated by that element of science fiction, C-O-N-L-A-N-G-E-R-Y, Con Langery. If you're interested in that element of science fiction and fantasy, they are the best in the beeswax.
Are they talking about Dothraki? Are they got to talk about Dothraki?
They were, yeah. I know when Game of Thrones first came on, they talked a lot about Dothraki. They're awesome.
Man, we got
I like Brian's criticism. Like, it's not a real language. They just changed this.
You know? Well, no. I'm just saying that if I remember correctly, and I'll be the first to admit I'm dumb about everything. But you know, I took that class, Languages of Science Fiction, back in college,
yeah.
And that was one of the we learned a bunch of the tricks that they do if they don't feel like actually getting off their ass and synthesizing
inventing
a new language from scratch. Like, for example, Dune. I think we talked about how Dune was all just
was
Arabic. Yeah.
Which was kind of fair enough, because in the actual the history of Dune, there's,
yeah,
you know, it would have come from Earth.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
I want a new language.
Con Langery did. They wanted to point out very specifically that they don't talk about the languages that use the tricks. They talk about real hardcore mother trucking invented language.
Man, do you think they talked about the? What's that awesome book that was supposed to be Mysterious Language and not Hustler. What's the one? It's a written book and that nobody could translate.
The Voynich Manuscript?
Supposed picture books.
Yes, probably. Whatever Andrew's saying is very likely correct, because it's a one where the documentary I saw recently was like the way that it was likely constructed was with just a series of 2 to 3 syllable letter syllables or symbols that were just sort of haphazardly constructed together. Does that sound right?
Like Goatman and Iron Fist?
Goatman and Iron Fist, yes.
Gentlemen, August 5th, Mars.
Wait.
Curiosity rover landing.
I want you to keep doing the rest of the segment.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Space, deers,
digging into surface.
Now, is this the rover that number one? I know that NASA put out that trailer recently. Was it the 7 minutes of terror that they were talking about?
Yeah,
this is that same one, and this is the same one that's equipped with an unprecedented amount of gizmos to look for life. Is that right?
That is correct, sir. So the Mars Curiosity rover is going to have the most advanced tools we've ever been able to put on the surface of Mars and to try to look for organic molecules in the soil.
Dude, this is huge. Now, to take people back, you remember this would not be the first time that we've had a Mars probe send back indications that there was life on Mars.
Well, and that's, you know, the Viking probe data is still debated, and that, you know, there's the one of the guys who was the developed the experimental package for it insists that it brought back interesting data that could be indicative of life on Mars, and other people say no. And it was just that, you know, how will the science experiment work when you're bazillions of miles away from Earth and you're measuring an alien world where you're not sure what life should or should not look like? You know, the traces of it.
Well, and that's the funny part is so the Viking lands, the probe sticks in its gizmo, and it comes back like, yeah, probably life. And weirdly, I guess people short circuit. They're all like, well, it says that, but meanwhile, we're clearly looking at a desert. So that was probably a mistake. And that was probably a false positive, was essentially what the scientists said.
Well, there was like, I forget what, it, you know, they had a heating element that was supposed to heat something up, and it got, you know, it was a different result than what you would expect, but it wasn't like a binary life or no life kind of thing. It was something different. You could be like, well, maybe that is in a different form. And, you know, since then, you know, we've been finding life in very, very odd places, and life, you know, on Earth, you know, you go to the Akami Desert, where it looks totally barren, and then you dig into the pores of rock. and you find life living inside of there. You look at the surface, you may not find anything, maybe some lichens or something, but, you know, other than that, you're not going to find anything. But deep inside, there's life.
Well, so, and in defense of the ain't no life on Mars argument, Mars is exceptional. I mean, even here on Earth.
That sounds like a Jamiroquai album.
Yes.
Ain't no life on Mars.
Ain't no life on Mars. But it's like, you know, here on Earth, we find life everywhere. So we think, well, maybe it is everywhere. But meanwhile, it's like you got radiation. It's baked dry. You got no magnetic shield protecting it. You got no significant oxygen for it to breathe. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's I don't know, though. On the flip side, be freaking rad. Martian microbes.
So we dig in there and we find a lot of organic molecules. We find all the, you know, the full package that we can expect to see of complex organic molecules. And what's our reaction?
I don't know if we discussed this or not, but it's like, weirdly, all of the, to be honest, I think our reaction will be a lot like when we found
the David Bowie song.
It'll be a lot like when we found the Higgs boson or the Higgs-like boson. It's like many of the most fundamental, most important scientific and philosophical breakthroughs oftentimes does nothing to affect the price of milk here on planet Earth. You know, it's like we'll go back to work and we'll do our things. But on the flip side, I mean, that's huge.
Let me play devil's advocate, though. The problem with the Higgs boson is nobody understands it. You know, it's this, you can, you know, many science writers will write these, when they get into these torturous analogies, imagine you're in a room full of people and you walk through there and the attractive people turn, it's like, forget it. You know,
imagine you've taught cats to act as parliament and
it's such a complicated thing in some ways to sort of wrap your head around. And then life, we understand. Life, we get. You know, something grows, and we, you know, there you get into these borderlines of what's life and what's not life. But I think that's a little, I'd say it's a little more, you're right, it's not going to affect the price of milk, but it does when you go look outside, you go, holy cow, when I look at the stars, what am I seeing? And am I seeing a vast, dead desert, or am I seeing just
I'm seeing real estate as far as the eye can see, real estate for mankind, for here to eternity.
I mean, I'm kind
like the
of
ocean,
in between.
I say the floor of the ocean. We used to think the ocean floor was a desert. You know, we used to think.
Okay, well, and tell
but,
me this.
But finding that, do we think about the ocean any different? I guess.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Tell me which you would rather have. Because understand, let's say there is rich, detailed life on, rich and diverse life on the surface of Mars. That would be a total bummer because it's going to make it way hard and it's going to make it a big question of whether or not it's appropriate for us to go sending our Western invading microorganisms into the surface of Mars. All of a sudden, it's one of those things where it's like, well, what are appropriate actions to take to continue to investigate? You got to be super delicate. Like, part of me wants it to be a desert, so then we could just march in and start setting up our tents and be like, we own this bitch.
I mean, that's if you care about microbes, that anybody would get weird about it. Like, there's microbes all over the place. Like, everything we do involves us.
Oh, no. But that's different.
Microbes.
Like, this completely independent type form of life developed completely independent or relatively independently from planet Earth. Like, you can't just go stomping on that. There's too much opportunity to learn from it.
I think that we've cross-pollinated and contaminated for a billion years.
Yeah, that's all we do. That's our move.
Yeah, who knows?
You don't think there would be a movement to protect this one opportunity?
Sure.
Oh, there'll be a movement. Is it going to be a movement that will stem the movement of, hey, let's live on Mars? No.
Hmm.
I mean,
it might be a thing. There's only going to be so much. We get all environmental and protective when you reach a certain point where you have enough resources to have those options. So, you know, you create the Sierra, you know, there's no Sierra Club in a poor country. You know, poor people are too worried about food and this. When we want to go to Mars.
Having just read the Rational Optimist, I think they said it was like, I'm going to make up this number. It was either $2,000 or $5,000 per year. Once the average income crosses that threshold, all of a sudden people want to spend money and change the economic development so they're not trash, you know, so they don't have to put up mm-hmm. with smog anymore.
Yeah, China's reaching that point. I think that you're going to have, the people who are going to have the ability and drive to go to Mars are going to want to be protective of Mars and not going to want to try to contaminate too much. And how much can we contaminate in the short term, given just the radically different ecosystems we're coming from?
Well, and also, we talked about this before, but in Kim Stanley Robinson's Red Mars, Green Mars, Blue Mars, you know, there's this fight between people who feel like it's mankind's destiny to terraform Mars, and meanwhile, the geologists who are there because they love unlocking the secrets buried within the rocks of Mars, and they feel like the very act of terraforming is to destroy this. So essentially, you have geologists who want to preserve, you know, representing the Earth-style green movement. Do you guys just feel like that noise is going to go away and terraform all the way?
I just think that paramount to everything, that like all of these will be part of the calculus. We will talk about it. We will discuss it. It will affect on some level our decision-making process, but the engine, the thing that makes it a conflict, is our drive to be a multi-planet species, and we're going to figure out how to do it.
I think we'll colonize. I'm kind of nay on the terraforming.
You think we'll just go and build a bunch of domes and
domes and stuff? The terraforming thing, I think that would be kind of a loss when there's so many other places to live within our solar system.
Well, like where else could we live in our solar system? I guess asteroids, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's enough party asteroids.
Matter. There's enough free-floating
party
matter.
Party rock is floating through space.
There's enough free-floating matter out there besides our planets and moons to make basically a million Earths worth of surface area.
Yeah. Now, has there been any experiments with creating artificial gravity by rotation? Like, it seems like that would be good on paper, but in real life, you would just get sick and your inner ear would be all messed up.
It depends upon how the size of this. Now, we've done that with the Apollo program, some of those, you know, lifting bodies where we've spun them and to see, you know, you cling to the surface. You just, the bigger the sphere, or the bigger the cylinder, the less you have that effect, you know, the less you get sick or whatever, because your head is spinning slower than your feet. You know, the bigger it is, the less of a problem. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, we need to do more experience on that. But I mean, that is in every single testable way, gravity.
Wow. Yeah, I wonder if you would just be able to adapt to it, because I know that the human body does some pretty rad things to adapt to just about anything. However, you know, I know that Richard Garriott, when he was talking about his experience in the International Space Station, that I forget what percentage he talks about, but he says for a significant number of people, it's just a headache. Like they don't know until they get up there. They show up and they just develop a headache, and they have that headache the entire run on the space station, and it sucks all the time.
Yeah. Well, the way I would imagine is we would take a couple kilometer-sized asteroids, tether them together, and then rotate them around each other and have G-like gravity. And you live inside and have it or whatever. Then the next generation start building cylinders and then orbital habitats and using things like plasma windows to hold an atmosphere. And that's all within existing technology, not using unobtainium or some sort of magical science fiction thing.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. Like, we're not going to live in space by walking on coals with Tony Robbins.
No, dude, says you. I went to his seminar. He said, if you want to live in space, give me $500.
Oddly enough, when people come back from space, they say the smell is like burnt plastic and singe, which is not unlike the smell at Anthony Robbins' seminar.
Wait a minute. They say planet Earth smells like burnt cinders?
No, people, you know, when you come back and you open up the spacecraft and all that.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, people, man, who be in space smell like this.
We got a sponsor?
Hell yeah. There's a frightening new project that needs your help over at Kickstarter. It's called Basement Bugs. Yes, Basement Bugs. It's about a trapped tenant in the basement of his creepy apartment building that's forced to suffer the gnawing bugs that are all around him. Here's the deal. You can go on over to Kickstarter, search for Basement Bugs. It's by Barnaby Badia. They need $31,000. They only got 9 more days to do this. That's at the recording time. of the Weird Things. Weird Things will come out on Wednesday, so that'll be 2 days less than that. So, or actually, probably one day because it's East Coast.
So they're already, they're almost halfway there right now with 9 days to go.
Yeah, so they need to get it 31,000 by August 2nd. It's a short film. You know, I'll tell you what. Get all up in there. Read about it. You got all sorts of things. $10 gets you thank you credit in the film. Let's scroll on down. Let's see what you get for $4,000.
How about $25, an official poster? You get a poster. $65, you get a poster, a T-shirt, special thanks on film, a DVD, and a digital copy of the film.
Yeah.
$150, you get a poster, a T-shirt, DVD copy, screening invitation, two invites for the screening. $2,500.
Yeah. You get dinner with Denzel Whitaker, Nick Covio, Barnaby Badia, and special thanks. Listen, head on over or just email them if you're interested in the movie and you want to help out in any way you possibly can. BasementBugsFilm@gmail.com. But check it out. It's sounds like cool stuff.
Hey, and anyone who sponsors this podcast, it's one of our own. So this is one of ours trying to make a movie.
Yeah.
Let's make some dreams come true.
That's dope to me.
Gentlemen, time for picks.
Well, let me ask you this. This is normally, like, especially this summer, there's been a lot of movies that have come out this summer. We've talked about the movies. I know me and Brian have seen Batman. Have you seen the Batman?
The Batman.
Andrew?
Not yet, no.
All right, so we'll wait. We'll table our Batman Rising conversation for another.
I'll tell you what, and this may be a retread here, but there's a fan film that came out this past week for Why the Last Man. Did you see this, Justin?
No, I didn't. I thought you were going to say the Punisher one.
No. Hold on, let me do Why the Last Man. Somebody put together, it's a 20-minute movie, and first of all, if you have never seen, if you've never read Why the Last Man, it's a fantastic comic book written by Brian K. Vaughan, published it under, I think, Vertigo Comics does it.
Mm-hmm.
It is great. I read the first half of it on my own dime, and Justin liked it so much, you physically mailed me your copies of the comic, all your trades.
Yeah,
so
I bought all the trades.
But if you look at this thing, it's called Why the Last Man Rising. It's a fan film, and it's one of these weird cases where the movie is so good that it short-circuits your fan film perceptions. It looks so good that you start to judge it as if it's a Fox pilot that you're looking at. I don't know how much money they spent on it, but it's this is from IGN, partnered with a guy. Let me get his name. I can't find it. Wait, I should really find it.
Christian Cordera?
Yes. Yes, that's it. Christian Cordera. But man, if you look at it, it's got all the themes of misogyny straight from the comic book. It sort of jumps forward from the point that the plot, of course, for the book is that all the men die on planet Earth all at the exact same time, except for one person, sort of slacker magician named Yorick, who's got a pet monkey named Ampersand, who survives and wants to find his sister out on the West Coast. But look at this, Justin. I mean, this thing's got like a budget.
Yeah, no, I'm watching it now. I haven't seen it. You know, it looks to be like samplings from, I guess, like probably the first trade paperback.
Yeah.
I don't know how many issues that would be, but kind of like select scenes from there.
Yeah.
But no, it looks very like more than just kind of, well, I guess some things look more fan filmy than others. I'm very excited to watch it, no matter what it is. I've always said I like the things I like more of. I like people to do more of, and my threshold is very low for, you know, what I will watch of things. So if it's like if my 6-year-old little brother said that he made a fan film of Why the Last Man, I would happily watch it. So I'm very excited to watch this.
And the action scenes are excellent. There's a couple of parts where you could tell like some miking issues or whatever, but it's just like definitely check it out. And if you haven't read Why the Last Man, definitely read Why the Last Man. It's a bit heavy. The comic I found was a little bit heavy-handed and hyper-focused on the gender roles of society and what it means, you know, what is it good that men are all gone because men are all jerks or not. But the fact
preach
that
it, sister.
The fact that they had a beginning, a middle, and the end, and it just really swept me up the entire time. I thought it was fascinating.
Well, I mean, all right, here's the and this kind of dovetails into my pick, but like I've kind of just come to realize that even amazing comic series, they just hit a point where like either they kind of like the nature of that sort of production kind of gets to them and they're just like they kind of wobble a little bit and the story gets fatty and weird or starts relying on themes that are maybe overused or they've hit before and it starts to strike the wrong note. And the best kind of adjust and then refocus their story and keep going. That was kind of as much as I loved Lock and Key. That was really where I kind of felt like I sort of stopped enjoying Lock and Key as much as I had because it sort of, you know, the central momentum sort of wobbled a little bit. Same thing with Why the Last Man. Why the Last Man went through, you know, a couple, you know, a little run where it just wasn't kind of where it was. And then thankfully for me, at least it got back there. But I'm reading a book now that I very, very, very much enjoy. It's called 100 Bullets.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you and I talked about this briefly, right? No, it was actually Brett that I spoke to.
Who is like, again, Brett is pretty much like the evangelist of comics in my life right now because he just reads them and they didn't even give them to me. He literally just throws them at me.
Well, and the way Brett described it to me, what he liked so much about this, and you can give me a second opinion on this. What he said he liked about it was that you started off the first issue with this conceit and you're like, oh, I get it. This is going to be the conceit of the book is that it's going to go through each of these 100 bullets. And then like, it just bails on it a few issues in and it gets way, way more interesting as a result. Is that the fact?
No. Well, that's not how I would describe it. I don't think it's necessarily wrong, but, here's the conceit. The okay. conceit is this, and this is not, I mean, I think this is legit to say, there's a man who gives you a briefcase with a untraceable gun and 100 untraceable bullets. And he explains a problem that has befallen your life. And these are like serious problems, like, you know, a loved one is dead or, you know, your life was ruined, and tells you who did it, gives you irrefutable proof that they did do it.
Right.
And then gives you, or then informs you that whatever you decide to do, you are, in the course of this, of you deciding what you're going to do up to murder, you are untouchable by the law and you can like get popped by the cops and they will within 12 hours release you from jail, you know? And so you have basically just to decide what you want to do. And like that concept, you know, obviously is very kind of is very stylized and you know, definitely something where I think if you looked at it you could be like, oh, okay, well, somebody was halfway clever and thought of that idea and that's what the comic's going to be. And you know, I will say that is kind of half interesting and I really liked it, but what I like about it, especially in terms of the problems that I've had, and not problems, but like where I've not liked other great comic series that I've liked, is that whenever the momentum of their main plot, which is far greater, and then goes into the machinations of why this guy is running around and how he has this power, whenever that momentum, they kind of want to take a break from that momentum, they just go into really cool, interesting sort of one-off stories about this guy offering people this choice. And it really made me think a lot as I was reading it, like, man, this is a fantastic television premise. Like, when all we've seen, and we've seen another three or four of them this year that are on, especially on network television, that are just crappy television premises. Like, television premises that are, like, they'd be okay movie premises. And they're going to expand them forever. You know, while we keep churning out those, a really fantastic premise like this, which I guess it ended its run in 2009, has kind of sat there, but now Showtime optioned it, so they're going to make it, and I'm very happy about that. But check it out, 100 Bullets.
100 Bullets.
Andrew.
Okay, all right. Pick. I just watched two movies, and neither one of them do I want to recommend because I was bored. But one I brought back, and the other one I just couldn't get over the hype. Vegas Show. I was in Vegas last week.
But you're not going to trash the movies? I want to hear what movies you want to trash.
Yeah.
I never trash movies.
Oh, all right.
Went and saw, really enjoyed, hadn't seen it in 2 years, was the David Copperfield show. He's got some new stuff in his show. Really, really dug it. Really enjoyed
God,
seeing
it just
that show.
And it was even better being a magician seeing it because I was fooled very badly by a few routines. It's very, very good.
And what's neat, too, is that like when he's in Vegas, he does this sort of very fast-paced, condensed show, you know, and that it's just this, it moves from the stuff. And very, very much enjoyed it. And, I've been like Brian and I both been fans of him for years. And it was just, he was just on Oprah's Next Chapter, talking about his life and all that. Very, very interesting, you know, stuff that I'd never heard. And then, you know, going to see his show live again, fantastic. So if you're in Vegas, go check out David Copperfield.
He's got charisma that is superhuman, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He's just got an otherworldly kind of charisma that is just titanic. Not only is he such an amazingly talented magician and performer, but like it's one of those things where you go and watch his show and you realize like that's a different class of human. That kind of entertainer is a different class of human.
There's a ton of his stuff on YouTube and you can go back and watch his first national TV appearance, I don't know if that's up there, was called Magic of the Roxy. But then you watch it when he did his ABC, before he did the CBS series, he did an ABC special. He's 20. He's 20 years old.
Holy
he's
cow.
There with like Cindy Williams and a bunch of other people. And then they're introducing like what's going to be the new fall lineup. And you're like, Carter Country, you know, shows you never even remember or heard of. And then it's worth it for watching that alone. But look at what he could do at 20 years old. And I don't think there's still a magician to the day that can match that.
Wow.
Yeah. He's awesome. Yeah, it's been probably about a year since I've seen the show, but it was amazing. But Ashley just went and saw it. She was just in Vegas and saw it and loved it. Thought it was amazing.
Right on.
Gentlemen, somewhere out there he lurks on a mountainside watching for danger. Goatman.
Somebody sent me this tweet of this photo of this episode of Weird Things. It's got the Mars rover. It's got goats walking on coals.
Is that a Hugh Jackman there with the face?
I don't know who it is. It's very disturbing, but I love it.
Our fans are weird.
Yeah, they are.
Yes.
I wouldn't
That's
trade them
awesome,
for the world.
Though. The goat on coals. That wins. That wins.
His little goat feet are on fire.
Yeah. He's getting ready to goat sue.
No, it's been weird. The ending, weird. It's been weird. It's been weird. Are we over?
Yeah, we're over. That was a good one.
You want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor, and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.